So, how is it useful for the state to claim ownership of this property?
Well, the United States, how did they created that trust account
But
to
how does?
fund the system because everything was in bankruptcy.
No, I understand. I understand that, right? Placing all of the property with tangible value into the trust, but how does placing, the umbilical cord and the placenta into the trust,
Because they're administering the estate of the decedent. You're not a decedent. What is a decedent? A dead thing.
and the estate has value from inheritance?
No, it has value because of the Social Security Act, because the Social Security Act was the creation of the trust by the federal government. It's not to do with inheritance. Who created the Social Security Act?
So, is this a way to obligate you into the trust?
If you volunteer. If you volunteer and run around and say, "That's my name." Yep.
Well, what if you simply apply for a Social Security card?
I don't have a problem with that. But why would you just see, we are too busy thinking we know what these forms say, and we're signing them saying we understand what they say when we really don't. We're just blindly contracting instead of saying, wait a minute. They say, look, you need this stuff to operate in the fiction world. Okay. Does that mean that you accept all the liability? No. Only by your consent. It's voluntary. Go back to what I read in the congressional record. Did they not make it their obligations?
So, if you, let's say that you want to participate in commerce, but properly, if you enter into a consumer credit transaction or a contract where you specify that you're the agent for the person, and even if you put, for example,
Oh, now. You got to use a little wisdom there.
okay.
If you're sitting across the table from someone else that probably don't know none of this stuff either, you're not going to be able to sign as agent. He's going to say, hey, where's your power of attorney? I need to see your paperwork. And if you understand UCC 3-402, what is UCC 3-402? The represented person. Who is the represented person? That Social Security trust. Is that represent Andrew? If I create a trust and I name it Andrew Kaufman, and I appoint trustees and I appoint beneficiaries, is that trust to you?
No.
But we run around all day long with that trust, even though it says on the back of the card that it's property of the Social Security Administration and it must be returned if we ask for it. We run around and say all the time, that's us. Who created the trust? Congress. Who put the estate into the trust? The state. Who's the beneficiary of the trust? The state. Because why? Who do they go to get their funds? The third trustee in the list. Who's the third trustee is Department of Health and Human Services. Why do you think the state goes to Department of Health and Human Services under Title II, Title IV, and Title V?
Now, I didn't know this. I thought the Treasury was the source.
They look, if you create a trust and you go down to your bank, what do they need to see? A trust certificate, right? So what's the state do? They send the estate record, including the birth certificate, for the infant to the Social Security Administration. Guess what happens? Trust gets created in that name. And right there's your trustees.
So you're saying that HHS has it because the
They
source of
are a
the property
trustee.
is biological.
No, not because it's biological. The estate isn't biological. The estate is because the biological died.
Right.
When you die, if you don't have a will, the courts and the family goes to probate it. What do? They put it into a trust until the probate decision is done. And then they divvy everything up in the family. Well, guess what? The mother signed the paperwork giving the infant, not the baby, to the deceit to the state. Well, the state says, oh, what are we going to do with this estate? We're going to put it in trust because why? We got to fund this system that's in place. See, we have a fiduciary duty to this system, and we're not doing our fiduciary duty. God gave us all of this, but we're so busy pointing the finger at government, we're not looking inward at ourselves and saying, wait a minute, we're just as much at fault because government is nothing but a reflection of the people.
So now our fiduciary duty, are you referring to
Working with
the
the government to
accounting,
say, hey, yes.
giving notice to principal?
Yes, all of that.
So can you explain what that role is?
You look, if you're not the grantor of the trust, which I've already laid out some of the evidence why you're not, because one, you don't have any firsthand knowledge of that name. Every single one of us believe, yes, I know. People are going to say, oh, he sounds stupid because he says believe. No, I know the scientific evidence is supported by fact that a baby is born from a woman. I get that. But none of us remember the event ourselves. And I say, thank God, because if I come out of my mother's vagina and I turn around and look, I'd probably be scarred for life.
It's protective amnesia.
Protective amnesia, that's right. So we come out and we don't really, the typical person can't remember anything much past 2.5 years old. Okay. So that means what? If you don't have any firsthand knowledge, in other words, you didn't witness the event with your memory, as in other than what you've been told by some woman you believe is your mother because she raised you, because you don't even have firsthand knowledge she is your mother. Again, when we were born, we don't remember that.
Right. And this is why, I mean, people who have been adopted, if the adoptive parents don't disclose that information, they can go quite a long time without any clue.
Without any clue, knowing that that woman that raised her is not her biological mother or
Correct.
his biological mother. Because why? They have no memory of that baby stage. Okay. So you think this entity's you, but it's not. There's three products. The Bible talks about the Trinity: God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. Well, you have three United States, you have three states, you have three persons.
Right, there is also just the principle of three in law.
Yeah, that's right. So you're volunteering to say that's your name, and you're accepting all the liability when it's the government's trust. A lot of the Republicans went all crazy because Biden is sending money to Ukraine and everywhere else. And I said, he's just doing his job. Well, how do you get that? I said, go read the Proclamation 2039 and 2040, March 9, 1933, right here, paragraph C. Authorize and direct the creation of such banking, I mean, in such banking institutions of special trust accounts for the receipt of new deposits, which shall be subject to withdrawal on demand without any reservation, restriction, or limitation, and shall be kept separately in cash or on deposit in Federal Reserve banks, or, and here's the clause, invested in obligations of the United States. So they send money to Israel, money to Ukraine, and the government has websites showing all their obligations all around the world.
Because they hold US Treasury notes.
Not
Is that?
just that, no, it's more than that. We got bases in other countries, we got treaties with
Right,
other
right.
countries, we got deals. There's all kinds of obligations. You know, we got obligations in Russia, but they get on TV and talk like Russia's an enemy.
Well, Ukraine is really part of Russia.
Well, I know that, but I'm just saying.
Because you know that the United States kept all of the trade of energy resources and such active with Russia, even when it was sending money to the Ukraine.
Yep. Now, people talk about, well, Proclamation 2039 is dealing with the bank holiday. They only closed it for a week. No, they didn't. They stop. What happened before Proclamation 2039? The banks were making their own currency, their own script, their own notes, and treating them like money, right? They shut that down. The banks have never went back to normal operations. And Proclamation 2040, I can't find anything that Proclamation 2040 has been done away with. I wrote an article on my website about it. Continuing in force the banking holiday proclamation of March 6, 1933. Whereas on March 6, 1993, I, Franklin D. Roosevelt, President of the United States of America, blah, 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 blah. Okay.
I'm pretty sure there was a congressional committee in the 70s that also looked at this and said it was still in effect.
Yeah, it was still in effect, yes. It says, now, therefore, I, Franklin D. Roosevelt, President of the United States of America, in view of such continuing national emergency, what was that? The bankruptcy. And by virtue of the authority vested in me in Section 5B of the Act of October 6, 1917, 40 Stat L, Statute at Large, 411, that's the Trading with Enemy Act, as amended by the Act of March 9, 1933, do hereby proclaim, order, direct, and declare that all the terms and provisions of said proclamation of March 6, 1933, and the regulations and orders issued thereunder are hereby continued in full force and effect until further proclamation by the president. Show me where it's been done away with.
Right. Any
the banking holiday is still going on. That's right. So they created this Social Security Trust, the special trust accounts. See, God created man, Satan created persons. We're running around here thinking we're the person. We don't have our business documents set up. We don't have anything set up properly because we don't know who we are. Who are you as a player in the game? I talked about the state earlier, how it's a stack of papers. Microsoft Incorporated, stack of papers. McDonald's Incorporated, stack of papers. Apple Inc., stack of papers. Everything needs to be through agency. They gave you a person, but you're not acting right. You're not doing things right. You don't have your stuff paperwork in order. You're going into court. The judge can't hear you because you have no standing because your paperwork ain't in order.
And is that because you're pretending to be the person? Is that why your paperwork is incorrect? Or is it just
no, your paperwork's in no, you don't have your business documents in order. And they know that name is being used. They don't know by who.
So what would those business documents consist of?
I created a limited liability company and got my assumed name certificates. And I got multiple assumed name certificates.
And how do those relate to the person?
Because it's an entity, is it not? Where is it doing business?
But I mean, you're putting in paperwork to use the name of the person as an assumed name for yourself?
Yeah, that's what it's a DBA. I'm doing business as.
I see. So that
I didn't do the assumed name certificate alone. I did the limited liability company in that name. Now, does that mean John Henry Doe LLC? No. The name of the company is John Henry Doe, comma, a limited liability company. What's the name of the business? What type of business? The comma is a separator. And then all my assumed name certificates are based on that. I did it in a specific place with a registered agent service, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right now I'm perfecting my operating agreement because why? They want you to use that person as a financial manager, asset manager, securities manager, property manager. So you need to set up your business structure right. You need to know what you're doing. Most people don't. Most people are looking around for a magic piece of paperwork to make the thing go away without gaining the knowledge on how to operate and how to defend it.
Can you go through those different roles again that you mentioned?
What roles?
About how to operate the business, you mentioned some different aspects. That of managing different aspects of the
person. What is the purpose of the business? Well, don't they want you to do financial asset securities and property management? Yes. The IRS says we want to audit you. We want to review your books. What is that? That's financial management, asset management, potential securities management, potential property management. The question is, which side of the ledger are you on? Are you on the debtor side or the creditor side? If you're on the debtor side, pay the tax. If you're on the creditor side, you don't owe the tax.
So this would involve certainly keeping an accounting ledger to demonstrate
Yes.
that, to notify the principal of tax liabilities and other liabilities.
Yes, it's their property. Let's see here. They tell us this is the Federal Judicial Center. Now listen to this.
It can
And
change.
there's this wonderful thing in that statutory sentence about search logic, which says, if any, which seems to imply that there are going to be some filing officers that don't have any search logic.
Well, and
Maybe half
there may be a few as we speak.
right.
So it raises the stakes, and getting the correct legal name of a registered organization, which is another new term, which means a registered organization is an organization where the state maintains a public record of the organization's name, or must maintain a public record of the
Showing that it
organization's name,
existed.
showing, showing that it existed.
I've heard it sometimes referred to as the state issues a birth certificate
Right.
That's
to
a
them.
little, but the
What did he just say? She's talking about a registered organization. What does he say? I've heard it said that sometimes the state issues a birth certificate. Who gets birth certificates? People do. Why was it? Why is it a registered organization? Because that estate was placed into trust.
So it's a trust certificate.
It can be viewed as a trust certificate because when you go to the bank after you create a trust and you want to get a bank account, what do they ask for? They might ask you for the trust indenture. And if you don't know your rights, you'll give them the trust indenture. The trust indenture, they don't have a right to see that. But what they do have to see is the trust certificate because the trust certificate says who the trustees are and what's the powers of the trustees. And when you open that bank account up, everything gets tied back to the social.
Yes, it does. Or an EIN, which is tied to a social.
And the EIN is tied to the social because when you fill out online for an EIN, what do they say? Well, who's the creator? John Henry Doe, Social 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's why it's a franchise of the United States. It's right in front of everybody's face. They just don't see it.
Would you be then using this LLC as the party to contract for a consumer credit transaction?
You can't even get consumer protection if you don't have your business documents in order.
But I mean, if you would, let's say, apply for a personal loan, would you apply
It's
as the
still
LLC or as?
as the all caps name.
So, how would having the LLC set up protect you from
Because you, if
acting
you've got a
as the
single,
entity?
but if you got a single member LLC, it's considered a disregarded entity and separate from the owner.
But you're saying you're not using the name of the LLC on the
The
credit
name, now
application.
you're thinking John Henry Doe LLC is the name of the company. I told you earlier, John Henry Doe, comma, name of the business is what?
So you are putting
John Henry Doe.
the name of the business then as the consumer.
Yes, because it's no different than what's on the social. It's the
But
same
you.
thing.
Right, but if you are essentially cross-examined, you can say, no, I'm not the person entity. I'm the agent for this LLC, and that's who is the contracted party.
Yes, that's why you have to know who you are. See, I have my documents in order showing who I am, and my business documents are signed by my given name and my title. I don't mix the surname with me.
What about if you have a ratification of agency? Would that be
That is also
acceptable?
evidence. Yes, it is. Well, not in every situation, no. Again, are you sitting across the at the mortgage closing table, are you sitting across the table from somebody that knows? Maybe, maybe not. This is private. This is the private side of the system. Because why? The system doesn't want everybody knowing this stuff because some people will abuse it. Look right here. When I got my Minnesota assumed name certificate, what does that say right there?
Place of business?
No, top paragraph. The
Assumed name.
filing
Oh,
of an
sorry.
assumed name does not provide a user with exclusive rights to the name because why? You don't own the name. Never have. The filing is required for consumer protection in order to enable consumers to be able to identify the true owner of a business. Wait a minute. That cuts both ways. So if that's for consumer protection, the name can't even get consumer protection without the proper documentation, because the fiction world is all paperwork. Who is the actual consumer? The man and woman is not the consumer. The name and the social. Have you ever created an account without a name?
Of course not.
That means the name and the social is the consumer. That's why when you fill out all these documents, what do you put on it?
The name and the social.
That makes it property of the trust, does it not?
Yes. You're just the representative agent for that trust. Right, as we discussed, right, we don't own the property and we don't take on the liability. We have, I don't know if you'd call it the beneficial use.
You're the beneficial owner. Beneficial owner has to do with rights of use. You don't have beneficial ownership. Beneficial ownership goes to the beneficiary. But look at the trustees. Secretary of the Treasury, why? That's the bank. Secretary of Labor, why? When you fill out a W-4 or W-9 for employment, you put the name, you put the social, you put an address, you check U.S. citizen. Who's the employee? Is it you or is it the trust? It's just the trust. The trust is a U.S. citizen because under the 14th Amendment, all corporations and businesses and trusts are U.S. citizens. The address is for the registered agent for service of process. Secretary of Health and Human Services, third trustee in the list. That's who the state goes to get their funding, get their distributions. That's why they're the beneficiary. And remember, in 1946, the born alive test was done. Well, guess what? You can see who the trustees are all the way back to 1945.
So, Pastor, there are many folks teaching this, you know, law from this perspective, and also people who are engaging in various processes to interact with the commerce system, for example, for tax purposes or discharging debt. So what kind of mistakes are they making with respect to what you just explained, and what are the potential consequences of making those mistakes?
Well, let's deal with the last thing you said, discharging debt. I want to do a debt discharge process. Follow the logic of the phrase debt discharge. You are, by your own admission, admitting there is a debt. Well, if there's a debt, pay the debt. But if you read your contracts, you appointed those people in those quote unquote loan agreements as your agent, because creditors, investors use agents to manage their assets. Do the elite manage their assets, or do they have agents do it?
Well, of course they have agents. Even the non-elite.
Right. Even the wealthy guy down the street that has his stuff in trust, he has agents manage everything.
Right. Or he has a 401k, right? He's not taking those funds and buying individual securities.
Yeah, he's not doing it himself as the investor. He says, oh, Edward Jones does it for me. The Edward Jones is his agent. But go read your contract with these credit card companies, car companies, mortgage companies. Let's see. One of the guys in my group sent me this beautiful, beautiful contract on a loan agreement where he purchased a truck. Okay. And I was just like, this is beautiful. This little paragraph in this whole thing. Page 1, paragraph 4. Limited power of attorney. You hereby grant to Upgrade a limited power of attorney and appoint Upgrade and its designees as your true and lawful attorney in fact and agent. With full power of a delegation, substitution, and resubstitution for you and in your name, place, and stead. In any of and all capacities to complete and execute the loan agreement, promissory note, and security agreement, blah, 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 blah. I don't have to read anymore. You get the idea. You appointed them as your agent. But the problem is you're not communicating them like your agent. You are communicating them like you're the debtor. Oh, I'm trying to do a debt discharge process. A creditor don't try to do debt discharge processes. A creditor goes out and says, hey, agent, I want to review your books. Hey, I want to see how you're managing my assets and my investment. That's what I'm saying. They put everything in front of you. You just got to get to where you can see it.
So if you, let's say that you made that request, what would you expect to be returned?
What I expect to be returned? Oh, we can't disclose that information, blah, 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 blah. Now there's a breach of fiduciary duty. Because what? Now you can take them to small claims court for breach of fiduciary duty because they're not doing their job as your agent. And then the court can make them produce it.
If you are the grantor of a trust set up like for a security instrument, for example, then what authority would you have to direct the agent for the beneficiary?
Again, the grantor is the creator of the trust. Depending on the type of trust, the grantor has certain authority. That's where you need to research trust law. Because why? What type of trust was set up?
Right.
The trustee is nothing but an agent on behalf of the trust. Depending on the type of trust, he's an agent of the grantor and always an agent of the beneficiary.
What I've read myself in trust law says that the grantor doesn't have the absolute authority over the trustee or the agent for the
correct
beneficiary.
Correct. He doesn't have, but he has the authority to review the books to make sure the trustee is doing their job. Just like the beneficiary has no authority over the decisions of the trustee, but the beneficiary has the authority to review the books. Hey, trustee, I want to see how you're managing my property because I'm the beneficiary.
But I believe if the beneficiary feels the trustee is not representing their best interest, they can fire and replace the trustee.
Not feels like it. You got to have evidence. There's got to be an actual breach of fiduciary duty. Stop eating landmines, dog.
And similarly, that's true for the grantor's right to remove the trustee if they violate, essentially if they're mismanaging the trust or violating the agreement or acting not in the beneficiary's interest.
Yeah, but you can't just claim it. He who makes a claim has the burden of proof.
Of course, you have to have evidence. So, for example, like you said, if you request an accounting record of the management of the trust property and they refuse to disclose that to you, right, that is evidence of a mismanagement or a breach of their duty.
Well, this is why I did an administrative process class showing people. A lot of people think, oh, I did three notices. That's the administrative process, blah, blah, blah. No. All your letters, all your communication that gets finalized with the three notices is the administrative process. The administrative process is basically all your communications that becomes part of your evidence to go to court.
Right. So, for example, in some communications that I had with a mortgagee bank, I had asked for, evidence that there was that they were the lender and I was a debtor because they had sent me a default notice claiming that. So we had several correspondence back and forth, and they did address some of the requests for information. They did provide some documents and they did provide some information in terms of written answers, but they fell short ultimately because the evidence they provided generated, of course, more questions and didn't. So in other words, they had nothing that actually evidenced that they actually loaned me money. But still at the end of that, right, I basically said, you know, you haven't answered my questions, because they kind of got tired of doing that and said, oh, just pay up, basically. So that's when I initiated the series of three letters, right, to place them in default. But up until that point, there was, seven or eight different correspondences, including.
Yeah, all of that becomes part of your file.
Right. No. I mean, it is. It's a big file, is what it is. Yes. All in paper, right? And it was mostly, you know, by service of process. They sent it, priority mail. I sent either registered or certified mail. But so that entire process is the administrative process. And I think in this case, you could probably also call it pre-discovery.
But basically,
it establishes a couple of things, right? One is it's an evidentiary record of the documents, and also the cooperation or people evidence of who's fulfilling their responsibilities and duties, but also can be a form of contract, which, you know,
contract by communication.
Right. And I had, you know, previously kind of referred to that as a self-executing contract, although that is somewhat a little bit distinct. It's like one subcategory. But this, in addition to establishing the evidence, right, you are establishing this contract, and it is also enforceable.
Yes. It is enforceable in court. A lot of people in the legal communities are saying, oh, never go to court, blah, 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 blah. No, court, look, you only have the rights you're willing to defend. Where does that happen? In court. Remember the old saying, all roads lead to Rome? Rome today is what? The courts. The question is which side of the ledger are you on? Are you on the debtor side, the defendant, or are you on the creditor side, the plaintiff?
Is it always that way?
Everything in this system is creditor and debtor.
I know, but is the creditor always the plaintiff?
Yeah. Always. Why do you think the DA is freaking up there trying to do things in a criminal charge? Why do they, the DA doesn't want to become the debtor? Because why? If the defendant wins, the plaintiff has to pay all the cost. Criminal cases literally are creditor debtor cases. I know, I don't remember the actual Georgia code. High Frequency Radio quotes this one all the time because it's in his state. It's in the Georgia code annotated. And he proves very well that criminal cases are just creditor debtor cases. Who's the defendant is the debtor. Debtor to who? The state.
Right. I see that in those cases, but I was more thinking of like a case where you have a consumer credit transaction, like let's say it's a credit card and there's a default and the bank is the plaintiff, right, and sues for an unpaid debt. But in reality, that bank is the debtor and the defendant in the case is the creditor.
Again, if you look in a credit card transaction, you set down, it doesn't matter what it is. I don't care if it's a purchase agreement for a car, a mortgage contract, a credit card agreement, you are playing the part of creditor. What is a Federal Reserve note? A Federal Reserve note, the courts are clear. It's a promissory note. When you sit down at the mortgage table and sign a promissory note, is there a difference?
Well, I mean, only difference is how it's negotiated, but it represents the same value. And
there, even on the how it's negotiated, it doesn't matter. In law, they both are currency. They both are identical. They look different to the eyes, But a promissory note is a promissory note is a promissory note. It don't matter. So that means when you sit at the table, you gave them currency. You fill out a credit card transaction. You made a deposit. That's why an NRE Celsius Network LLC bankruptcy case that was decided January 4th, 2023, the court in that case said the depositors are the creditors.
Now, that is with a checking account, or is that depositing a note into a loan? Because there's also the financial U.S. code, right, that says FHA banks are borrowers, not lenders.
Do what now?
In the United States code, I can't remember the title and section, but it describes the home loan banks as borrowers. It's duties.
And remember, everything is backwards to what you think. The U.S. code explicitly says that banks cannot loan money.
That's what I'm talking about.
So that means they are the borrower. They become the debtor because you gave them a note. So what do? They take your note and they turn it into an asset, either through taking it to the treasury or securitizing it. One of the two.
I think they do both.
Yeah, they do both. But they don't do the treasury until maturity, after they've bled all your wealth off. Why do you think we have a stock market? We know Public Law 73-10 and 48 Stat 112, people need to stop using HJR 192. It's not a law. 73-10 and 48 Stat 112 is the law. But it goes back to everything's prepaid because why? It's the credit of the United States through the Treasury. Think about it. If the credit is coming from the owner of the account and you are the agent for the trust, and you were issuing a note on behalf of the trust, which role are you playing, the debtor or the creditor?
Well, you're playing the creditor, of course. But the confusing a part is the promise to pay language.
No, it's not. It's a promissory note. That doesn't mean it's not currency. What is a Federal Reserve note?
Well, I know that's a promissory note.
A promissory note is always a promise to pay. Does that mean it's not money?
But this is how they, you know, want you to understand it, right? That when you sign that it has nothing to do with it being money, that it's simply you're promising to pay with other promissory notes, right? That you have to earn through your
promise to pay. Promissory notes?
But isn't that the common understanding of people who generally sign these notes in a consumer credit?
Just because it's your understanding doesn't mean it's right.
Well, I know, but I'm trying to make a point of how people get fooled by this, and it is confusing because you are signing something, right, that says that you promise to pay, and it does give like a monthly dollar amount. And without the understanding, of what this currency or legal tender, right, or U.S. money you're under the impression that the only way that you have a debt, first of all, because you're promising to pay it, and then that the only way you can actually satisfy that obligation is through your labor, right? That's the common understanding.
Common understanding can be wrong.
Well, no, of course it's wrong, right? That's the whole reason we're doing this interview and putting it out there, is to help people understand the truth. But I think it might be, you know, for us who have been looking at these issues for quite a long time, we can overcome this, you know, conceptually speaking. But in the beginning, it's a little bit, I think, difficult to wrap your head around that, you know, you're signing an agreement where you're promising to pay in some way that's familiar with you your whole life, whereas in actuality, that's not really what you're doing, because every promise to pay is an empty promise. It's just a formality.
It's not an empty promise. It's well, not an empty promise.
So how is the obligation actually being satisfied with payment? Or is it have to do with that payment is performance rather than a product of our sweat equity or labor?
It has nothing to do with that. You paid the day you issued the note.
Well, okay, but not in the way that anybody thinks is paying. Like what did, you know, you paid because it was exchanged for someone else's promise?
No. Again, when you sat at the mortgage table, what did you do?
Signed.
No, you gave them a security. That means okay. You paid.
So explain the mechanics just for people with no understanding of this, how that constitutes payment, because you're basically saying, right, by signing a promise to pay that act in and of itself is the payment, correct?
I'm not saying it. They're saying it.
I mean, I know it's in the law, but,
What is this? 12 USC 412, right?
Yes, I'm very familiar with this.
So what do you do to get the stuff you want? You fill out an application. Every single one of these notes, you fill out an application, right?
Yes. Sometimes more than
one. And what gets attached to the application?
The collateral security.
Does that say anything about a loan or a debt?
No. Well, it doesn't say it here in this law, right? But it
because is, this is based on what? The Federal Reserve Act. In other words, when you literally issued a security to the financial institution, your thinking is you have a loan. Your thinking is that you are a debtor. Is that truly what happened?
Well, no, it's not truly what happened, of course, right? Because they can take that instrument that you signed, right, and to the Federal Reserve with the application, and they can exchange it for Federal Reserve notes. Right. And that is the payment, even though it's
they don't exchange it necessarily for Federal Reserve notes, because why?
Well, I know that they don't
you
have to
read it. No. You're making a presumption here on what I'm getting ready to say. Read Title 31 CFR 363. A lot of people go to 363.6. Oh, it's got the definition of minor. They don't look at the word book entry. They don't look at the word custodian. There's a lot of words they don't look at. It's all book entries. 3% of the global supply is cash. The rest of it's all book entries on a ledger.
Right. And Federal Reserve notes do not have to be, you know, paper notes, right? They can be electronic entries, as you pointed out, right? Because when they're giving the application and the collateral security, they're getting bookkeeping entries. Just same thing when checks are used for payment, right? That there's simply a debt that's exchanged on the ledger between, you know, that's settled between the banks at the end of the day.
It doesn't ever get settled. What does the bank do with the note, the security instrument you gave them?
Well, you're talking about for a secured note, or are you talking about the note itself?
Look, it doesn't matter what kind it you call it. Like I said earlier, a promissory note is a promissory note is a promissory note, right?
But what
so
about
you issued them a collateral security attached to an application? The application tells the government, the bank wants this much credit. Under 12 USC 411, they're supposed to take it to the Treasury window. They don't. They put it into an investment security, call it a mortgage-backed security or some other investment vehicle. They hold it until a maturity date at some point in the future. Then take it to the Treasury after they took all your money.
Well, if they put it
in... It's literally a voluntary system. How is it voluntary? They're using your ignorance against you. I don't care what people think about it. I care about what it is it.
So what about the mortgage contract or the deed of trust which pledges the property?
How can you pledge the property with you didn't own it, neither did the bank? When you filled out the paperwork, did you own the house?
Well, the mortgage contract actually says that you certify you're the owner. And
You're not the owner. Who is the owner?
It must be the person.
The government. Whose name did you put the contract in?
The person.
You're the agent acting on behalf of the person.
But is
the person is owned by the United States. The United States is the owner because they mortgaged everything in 1933. You're just saying, hey, I'm certifying that. Yes. As the agent, I'm certifying. Yes. The principal owns it,
but
you, the man, don't own it.
Isn't the principal pledging it to the bank?
No, no.
So what is the
security was given to the bank. You were thinking the security and the home are tied together. No, they're not.
Well, but the instruments say that they are tied together.
I don't care what they say. The day you sit and fill out the paperwork, let's say the name is you. Did you that day own the house?
Well, I am never the owner of the house, right?
Well, let's just stop with all the other stuff of what it is. Logical questions.
Well,
let's say the name is yours. Let's say your mom gave birth to you and that is your name. Let's just look at it from common law stuff.
So there's the warranty deed, right? Which
Hold on. Now, before we get into all that, when you sit down, and you are Andrew Kaufman. Did you own the house the day you filled the paperwork out?
Like at the closing or?
At the closing, yes. Did you own the house?
Well, I didn't think I did at the time, but.
Correct.
There was a document executed that did state that.
Did that make it true? That.
Well, I mean, how would it be true?
Why? Did you have any evidence before the closing table that you actually owned the house?
No, because no one showed me the warranty deed until I sat down at that table. And I'm
so
actually
that means
not
what?
Sure I even saw it when I was at the table.
If you legally did not own the house, how can you put something up as collateral
that you don't own?
Okay, that you don't own.
I agree that the mortgage is an invalid contract, and that's not the only reason. But
not the only reason.
Right,
you're right.
But wouldn't that be fraud on my part for misrepresenting my ownership?
Not necessarily fraud on your part, but it would be constructive fraud. There's a difference between constructive fraud and fraud. A lot of people throw this word fraud around and they don't know what it is. They sit there and say, oh, they committed fraud. No, fraud, the blanket statement of fraud requires intent. Can you prove the other party across from you intended to commit fraud? No, because these people on the other side of the table typically are just as ignorant of the system as you are.
So is this like fraud in factum? Is that another term for constructive fraud?
No, constructive fraud doesn't require intent. Constructive fraud means the contract was built with fraud in it.
And you think that is that the courts will respect that?
They have no choice. It's in contract law.
I mean, because there
constructive
is
fraud is a legal principle. And there's material facts that were not disclosed the day of it, because the average person doesn't read the contract. They sit here and say, sign here, sign here, and sign here. Because you didn't read it when you started, did you?
No, of course not. I tried to ask my attorney to send it to me in advance so that I could have time to review all the documents.
And they won't do that.
Well, he said that he didn't receive them in advance, that only the morning of. And I didn't want to, you know, I was worried that the deal would not go through if I delayed to review all the documents. It was like a form of duress.
Yeah, but do you have evidence of that?
Evidence that I was under duress?
Yeah. You can't make that claim if you have nothing in evidence. Your attorney, you said, hey, attorney, I need blah, blah, blah. Okay, I'll get it to you. Where's your evidence?
Well,
do you have evidence that he said, like if you have an email that says, hey, I just got them the morning of. What do you want me to do?
I'm pretty sure I have messages on that.
Then that's evidence that, yes, you were under duress. Why? It's either you go sign or you don't get it.
Right. So, Pastor, I want to come to an end because of the length of this discussion, but I think that we covered quite a lot of foundational ground. I think that it will require some reading for people out there who have not already looked at this material to understand fully what we were talking about. But I think the basic aspect that we are, you know, confusing our role in the system, and we're acting as if we are a pile of papers, and that we need to come from the perspective of understanding that essentially this is a trust that was set up for us, but we are not it. And we have to know that how to, you know, operate within this so that we don't incur liability inappropriately, so that we don't get mislabeled as being in debt or being in borrowers when that's not the truth of what's going on, and allow us to essentially live in a proper way such that we can, you know, achieve the prosperity, abundance, and fellowship and kindness, and pursue, you know, meaning in life rather than involuntary servitude.
Well, it's not involuntary. That's the trick.
Or voluntary servitude.
It is voluntary, because why? When I turned 18, did I care about learning what my rights were? No. I got married at the age of 18. I cared more about chasing women, drinking beer, and smoking pot than I did about learning what my rights were. And that pretty much goes for all of us at some level. And look at all the years we wasted. And then we get into a situation where we got tickets, we got criminal charges, we got foreclosure, we got something. And now we're sitting there saying, wait a minute, I feel something's wrong. But look at all the years we wasted. The average elite reads one book a week. And we can't even read a book a year. And we're wondering why we're in the shape we're in.
Yes, I
am. And I say we in general. You, mister, are very intelligent. You read.
Absolutely. And I actually, in my membership, have a book every month that I encourage my members to read. And of course, I've read all of them, and we often have some discussion. But yes, we have to get back to this educational practice of pursuing our curiosity to understand how things work in our world.
Yeah.
We're lost without it.
And I sent you the link to my link tree. You can put it up. People can follow me on Rumble, YouTube. I've got BuzzLikosNomos.institute is my website, TikTok, all these different, I got all these different platforms. This is literally my ministry. That is the reason I can always relate it back to the Bible, because I personally believe that God gave us a gift. He gave us what we have. We have been derelict in our duties, and we're sitting there saying, government, fix it, government, fix it. The reason why government can't fix it is because why? We have just as much a responsibility to what God gave us as they do.
And this is the same teaching that I give over and over again about medicine and health, is that we cannot get it from somebody in a white coat. We have to take the responsibility ourselves, be our own health authority, just as we have to be our own law authority, our own finance authority, etc.
Yep, that is true. And the only way we're going to look, the only way we're going to get to the point where we can navigate is we got to learn the rules. When we learn the rules, we can start navigating, because I've seen success. I mean, I don't care that they want to make currency. Just get out of their way. Stop accepting the liability. Stop being the liable party and say, hey, it's your property. Do what you want with it. I don't care. The owner can do what they want with it.
And we can just go right on living, taking care of our families, and reading more books.
That's right. Well, brother, it was a pleasure. And we shall talk again.
I look forward to it, Pastor. And please, once again, look below for all the information on where to learn more from Pastor of the Way and his platform, Basilikos Nomos Institute. And I will see you on the next installment of Medico Mentum Authentica. This is Dr. Andrew Kaufman signing off.